Welcome to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Hagen, a nutrition coach, entrepreneur, food freedom expert, and forever a recovering disordered eater. I am here to help you own your enoughness, find your very own food freedom, and achieve your health and wellness goals in a way that gives more than it takes. Each week, I will provide you with insight and inspiration surrounding no-nonsense nutrition, mindset, motivation, body image, confidence, and other wellness wisdom. Welcome back to another Q&A podcast episode. I am here with the amazing Coach Lauren. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Nicole. How are you?
I'm good. It's a Friday. We just finished up our team meeting. We've got exciting things on the horizon. Clients are crushing it. I'm in a good mood. What about you?
I said on our team call, I was like, I'm motivated. I'm ready to do this. It's an exciting time here at Nutrition with Nicole.
Yay. Oh my gosh. I am sticking to my word. And I have another podcast review that I want to share. And this is from CEEJUN. And the headline is, unlike other nutrition podcasts, which I really appreciate.
Yes.
And here is what this reviewer has to say. Nicole's nutrition philosophy is unlike anyone I've heard before. She addresses the mindset behind the relationship to food. I'm so glad she started this podcast as it contains so many truths and nutrition nuggets that are motivating and encouraging. Give this a listen if you're done with dieting and looking for a different way to address your health.
Amazing.
Shout out to everyone that's done with dieting.
Yes. And I think anybody who's had success with changing their habits and their relationship with food knows how insanely crucial and key tackling the mindset aspect is. It's not about what you're eating a lot of the time. There's so much more to it.
Lauren, do you remember on our last Q&A recording, I said that we needed to figure out how we were going to like celebrate the rock stars who take time to leave reviews?
I do remember that.
We didn't talk about this, but here's what I'm thinking. No. Here's what I'm thinking. Like sending a little journal or notebook, it didn't feel like the vibe for me. However, if you leave a review and we pick your name and you would love a journal, just let me know. And I'll send you the same journal I send all of our rock stars who start. Here's what I'm thinking. So once a month, we pick at random a review, a new review. So if someone has left a review in that month's time, we're going to pick a person at random. How do you feel about gifting that person a free, like hot seat coaching call?
I love it. I am 100% here for it. The more people we can help, the better, right? And if somebody wants to try out what coaching looks like or just get the answer to one of their like burning questions or challenges, I mean, sign me up. I'm all for it.
Okay, good. I'm glad you agree because I have no backup plan.
So if I was like, no, I'm not going to do that.
I had a strong suspicion you would not say no, because if someone's listening to the podcast enough that they feel so inclined to leave a review, why would we not want to offer them a coaching call where they can get their questions answered and we can help them begin to strategize and create a customized nutrition plan? Like, it's a win-win for everybody.
Totally win-win. I will happily donate my time for that.
Okay. You heard it here first. We are not tracking reviews. Yeah. We heard it here first too. We're going to be tracking reviews. If you leave a review in the next month, I will be selecting at random. And on our next upcoming Q&A episodes, we're going to announce a winner. And you then get a free hot seat coaching call with Lauren.
Oh, yay! I'm so excited.
Okay, now on to our questions for the day. Before we get started, Lauren, I have to tell you, I listen to other people's podcasts as well as our own during my workouts. And I pressed play on a podcast with two of my favorite colleagues. I'll call them colleagues, but they're really just like amazing people I follow online. And I feel like they're my friends, but they probably don't really know me or keep up with me. Kate Lyman and Michael Ujoa, both of whom have been on the show before. They started a podcast together. It's great. And they did a Q&A episode. And so I started listening to it and I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Can I tell you, it was 15 minutes long and they addressed 5 questions.
Oh my God. We're not that.
We're so not that.
We are not that. We have a lot to say. It's because of our passion, right?
Like, I finished like 2 exercises and I was like, there's no way this is done already. Why do Lauren and I talk for ages?
We are just you can't deny the passion that we have for the subjects, right?
Oh man, it was hysterical. And at the same time, I appreciated that we will never be Kate and Michael. And that's fine because yes, we have a lot of passion and we feel like we need to convey a lot in the world of nutrition where things are super nuanced and there's rarely an easy, universal, one size fits all answer.
And it feels to me like every time I'm talking about one thing, I'm like, well, this connects to this other thing and that might be helpful and let's talk about it all. Maybe we should be a little, I don't know. I like our method.
If we're too long-winded for you, go find another podcast. No, just kidding.
No. Stay here.
Stay here. We love you. I will give you a podcast listening hack, if you will. I listen to all podcasts on 1.25 speed.
I've heard of people doing this. I think it would drive me nuts.
It's not enough to drive you nuts. So 1.5, a little chipmunky, like a little too fast, and it like ramps up my anxiety. 1.25 is enough just to like erase the pauses between like thoughts and sentences. It doesn't stress me out. Give it a try. See how it feels for you, but it does make me more efficient with my listening.
All right. Hot tip. I'll have to give it a try.
Okay. We're going off track already and we haven't even started.
That's why ours is in 15 minutes.
At the beginning of launching the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom podcast, which was in 2019, which feels like ages ago. I can't believe it. I was kind of sharing with friends and family, hey, yeah, tune in, let me know what you think. And I remember one of my clients at the time reaching out to me and saying, Nicole, I love the podcast, but I just don't understand why you talk so fast. Come to find out, she was listening at like 2x speed. Oh. So like this the entire time she's listening to the podcast.
That's hilarious.
How did you survive an entire episode like that, let alone multiple?
How are you like absorbing anything? I feel like I would just be like, oh my God, I need to turn this off.
She was just trying to support me. Yeah.
Aw, so nice.
I know. Okay, let's get down and dirty. We've got 4 questions that were submitted in the DMs this week, and we are going to answer them. The first one I thought was truly fantastic. We've never gotten this question before in a Q&A. And that is, how do people's food budgets usually change as they start working with you? Do they go up, down, stay the same?
I think this is a great question. Because it's so relative, especially right now. I mean, food is getting more expensive. It's very noticeable. And if you have a family, especially to feed, your grocery budget is probably an important part of your budget. Like, it's something that's important to you. So I agree with you. I think it's a fantastic question. I guess I can't speak to individual clients' food budget, but I am never encouraging like eat all organic. You have to buy all of these special products. You have to buy all these supplements. There's zero of that when you're working with you or I. So to me, I'm not sure if it would really change all that much and it could possibly go down, because what we want to do with all of our clients is encourage whole food consumption, right? Encourage some meal prepping, things like that. So these kind of little habits that might encourage you to go through the drive-through less, save some money there, to buy less like processed foods, which tend to be more expensive, and just to focus more on like your whole foods and your produce and proteins and things like that, that you can buy for fairly cheap if you're looking for it. I myself am an Aldi shopper to the core. I have priced it out. It's where you save the most money. And I would encourage anybody who's looking to keep their grocery budget under control to do the same. But I do not buy organic almost anything. Like I said, I shop at Aldi. I meal plan out a little bit, which helps us keep like the eating out under control. And we just kind of plan our meals around like our pantry staples and our proteins that I buy when they're on sale, and kind of buy in bulk as much as possible. And so for somebody who's coming to me, I wouldn't want that to be a fear of, oh my gosh, how am I going to afford all of this healthy, nutritious food? I would never expect a client to push their grocery budget to a point that they're uncomfortable with in order to eat a certain way. I just full on do not believe in that. So I guess my answer would be it shouldn't change dramatically in either direction, and it might actually help you save a little bit of money.
Yeah. I have a couple of different thoughts on this. And when I was asked this by a prospective client, I thought, wow, this is a brilliant question, because this individual is getting ready to invest in nutrition coaching. So I would want to know how other areas of my budget might change as a result also. And what I told her, and this is of course just through empirical evidence I've seen in the lives of my clients, we obviously don't track our clients' grocery budgets, but what several have said to me is that their eating out and ordering in expenses significantly decrease after they start coaching. And usually that's because they are feeling a little bit more competent, maybe in the kitchen and in the grocery store. So they feel like, okay, I have what I need to last me the entire week. Maybe there's fewer of those panicked eating occasions where it's like, I don't know what to eat. Okay, we're eating out tonight. Also, we are really fantastic at helping our clients set themselves up for success. And maybe that looks like pre-planning, coming up with a little loose menu for the week, or prepping, doing some meal prep for the week. So there's fewer evenings where you have zero plan, in which case you rely on like takeout or, you know, going out to eat again. So that portion of budget I have seen decrease. Now, I think to answer this person's question, and what I told them is, well, it sort of depends on what your budget is comprised of. So if you're ordering out a lot, or you feel like you're buying a lot of pre-made things because maybe you just don't have a great skill set in the kitchen, I would expect your budget to go down. Maybe if you feel like you're not buying a lot of lean proteins, you're not getting fresh produce, you may see a slight uptick at the beginning, but it really depends on what your food budget looks like to begin with. What I would say though, bottom line, is Lauren and I are here to make nutrition work for you. So if you come to us and say, hey, here are my goals, here are my food preferences, here is, you know, my current living situation, and here's my food budget, we're going to help you find the most goal supportive groceries within your budget. We will never, ever, ever encourage you to spend outside of your means in order to eat well, because you don't have to. You can make healthier eating choices, regardless of your food budget, regardless of whether you love spending time in the kitchen or you hate spending time in the kitchen. I think based on what we have heard from our clients, we see a decrease some of the time, other times stays the same.
And I would just use this quick opportunity to say too, that like some of these foods that might be like not as like popular in the like wellness health world are actually really nutritious. Like you can buy canned fruits and veggies and they're really cheap. You can buy frozen. I live for frozen fruits and vegetables. They don't go bad. You don't have to worry about waste. And they're generally pretty cheap. I buy these bags of frozen broccoli and it's like $1. I get them from Aldi, maybe $1.10 or something like that. Even like whole grain bread, it doesn't have to be some expensive brand like Dave's, whatever, which is great and delicious. And I like that brand, but you can also buy the like whole wheat loaf for $1.52 if that's what's in your budget and that's what you like. So you don't have to be buying all of these fancy expensive products if it doesn't fit your budget. You don't have to put that pressure on yourself. You can totally utilize some really budget friendly food items and increase your health at the same time.
Can I also just take this opportunity to brag on a couple of clients who have started growing their own produce? Now, this is not an expectation. This is not even something I do currently. Like, this is not something you have to be prepared to do if you are investing in coaching. But I have had three different clients in my recent coaching call history share with me that they are so excited about the fact that they can grow their own romaine to eat their salads. I have a client who's saying she's overflowing with vegetables from their garden. And that is a huge cost-effective way to make sure that you are decreasing your food budget and eating super nutrient-dense stuff. So yeah. I think as maybe your understanding of nutrition grows and your passion for feeling great and living well grows, there can be some really amazing benefits in terms of like budget savings.
Yeah, totally agree. And I'm jealous of those people that have successful vegetable gardens. tried it. The squirrels get it. During COVID, though, this is like a fun little side note. We had an extremely successful pumpkin patch, but it grew so big. We were not expecting it. We could like barely park the cars in the driveway because it was like all in the driveway. But we got like 10 full pumpkins. It was so exciting.
I heard pumpkins and watermelons are a little like all over the place. Like you have to have yardage.
I was not expecting it to grow as long as it did. I was expecting it to go in a similar vein as our other attempts at gardening. And it was our only really successful gardening attempt. So 2020, we rocked the pumpkin patch. It was great.
My clients have inspired me to learn how to grow my own romaine now. So stay tuned. That's coming.
I think lettuce is actually one of the easier things to grow, if I'm remembering.
That's what she was saying. My client was like, I set this up and basically it's like self-caring. Like all I had to do was set it up and now it kind of takes care of itself and I get the benefits. So yeah, I'm all about it. Okay. Are you ready for question number two?
I am ready.
What are your thoughts on impossible meats? Would they be a suitable source of protein? Can you first tell us what impossible meats are?
So impossible meat, Beyond Meat. There's like a bunch of different brands now. I think there's one called like Garden Life. It's basically plant-based products that are made to look and taste and have similar nutrition profiles to their meat, their animal-based counterparts. So they have burgers that look and taste like a beef burger, or they have everything. They have sausages and chicken nuggets and chicken tenders and chicken patties, and they have like pretty much any animal protein thing you can think of. There's going to be a plant-based counterpart for it. And for the listeners who do not know, I am a vegetarian. I have been on and off for most of my life, but currently I think I'm going on like 12 years of being a vegetarian. I'm not vegan. I want to make that clear. I am not vegan, but I am vegetarian. And I have a 12-year-old daughter who has been vegetarian for the last 2 years as well. And she is much pickier than I am too. So she actually loves these meat alternatives. And as a mom who worries about her protein intake, it's helpful. It's a great thing to have around. She gets to enjoy barbecues because she loves a burger. She loves, you know, sausage sandwiches in the morning, things like that. And so in that way, I find it very helpful. Again, as a mom who's concerned about making sure their daughter's getting enough protein to, you know, active kid, to support all of that. So there's a real place for it. It is a higher source, a high source of protein, higher than a lot of other vegetarian sources of protein. And so in that way, it's also extremely helpful. It's really convenient too. It's just grilling it up, you know, throwing it on the stovetop most of the time or in the oven. They're fortified also with some of the vitamins and minerals that are hard to come by in plant-based food, like B12 and zinc and iron. I would point out too that there's maybe some concern as to whether or not those sources of vitamins and minerals are as readily bioavailable to our bodies as it would be coming from like a burger or something like that. So there is that to point out. It might not be as quite high quality. If you're going for that plant-based meat in terms of looking for those vitamins and minerals, you might be better off with a supplement. That being said, like literally everything else that we consume, I would recommend practicing some moderation with it. It is still a pretty highly processed food source. They're relatively high in fat. One Beyond or Impossible Burger has about 14 grams of fat. If you're looking at an 80-20 4-ounce burger, like a comparable size, it's lower than that. An 80-20 burger is going to run you about 22 grams of fat, but a 90-10 burger is going to be similar to your Impossible Burger. It's going to be 13 grams of fat. So they're higher in fat. They're still a highly processed food source. And that's all just to say, like 100% of everything we talk about on here, I would just practice some moderation and balance with it. I wouldn't recommend that you wake up in the morning and you have some plant-based sausages and a plant-based burger and plant-based chicken tenders for dinner. I would, if you are vegan or vegetarian, I would recommend you mix it in with other things like tofu and tempeh and seitan. Or if you're vegetarian like myself, I use eggs and Greek yogurt and cottage cheese and things like that. More whole food-based sources of protein. All in all, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think if it helps you stick with your preferred way of eating and it's a convenient source of protein for you, that's fantastic. If it allows you, like my daughter, to have a burger when everybody else is having a burger, but you decided you want to be a vegetarian, I think that's fantastic. So all in all, just use some common sense nutrition, and I wouldn't rely on it for 100% of your protein as a vegetarian or vegan. If you want to use it and you enjoy it, fantastic. Just practice some balance with it. I personally, a little fun fact, I'm vegetarian because I genuinely dislike the taste of meat. So why I love a veggie burger or a black bean burger, I don't eat these because I don't like them, because I'm not seeking that taste of meat anymore. So there's also like, yeah, if you want it, go for it occasionally. If you don't like it, there's a lot of other great sources of protein as a vegan or vegetarian too that you can utilize.
I think ultimately it boils down to the motivation behind choosing those things. Are you choosing them because, like in your daughter's case, it's a great meat substitute for someone who chooses not to eat meat or doesn't like meat? In which case, like you said, maybe you don't even like the meat alternative, but is it something that you're using occasionally, like as a great substitute? In which case, awesome. But if it's going to be the protein source you're most dependent on, just like a meat eater, we would say, hey, let's maybe not get the majority of your protein from processed meats, like a deli meat or a sausage or, you know, something like that. Let's look for some other more whole food sources. I would say the same thing to any vegan or vegetarian who's looking at meat alternatives. Like, let's get some protein from other sources. Yes, it's a little bit harder as someone who doesn't eat meat. We have to get creative with different plant-based proteins, but I think the emphasis should be there rather than let me use all these meat alternatives as my substitute for the majority of my protein consumption. But I think using them sparingly, not an issue whatsoever. I do find, what was it, McDonald's or Burger King, one of those fast food chains came out with a meat alternative burger. And a lot of people were getting it because they thought it was healthier than the actual like burger. That was not the case. So if you did a nutrition comparison, the meat alternative was actually less favorable nutritionally than the meat. So again, just taking a look at like, what is this actually comprised of? What is this giving me? Why am I choosing this? But nothing wrong with any processed packaged meat or meat alternative. It just probably isn't the best to have it as the bulk of your diet.
I'm glad you brought that. Yeah. Look at if you're choosing it to be healthier, but you genuinely like a burger or whatever, I would question whether or not it's an actual healthier choice. You're going to get more amino acids and vitamins and minerals in a beef burger than you are in a plant-based one. And again, like we mentioned, these are like highly processed foods still. They're just a convenient source of protein to utilize at times. That's kind of how I think I would look at it. Nothing you need to demonize, but utilize those more whole food sources as often as possible.
Totally agree. What was the question you received, Lauren, in your Q&A box?
It was, does keeping track of fitness and food really help?
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
I wish I could ask this person a question in response to their question. That question would be, help what?
Yeah.
Does tracking food and fitness really help? I'm going to just kind of take a step back. Does it help with health and fat loss? We can kind of take that approach. My answer would be, it depends. It depends, which is not a fun answer, but it depends on the person and their tendencies, their personality, and it depends on the emphasis you're placing on tracking. So I think most people can benefit hugely from collecting some data, some information from tracking their movement habits and their nutrition habits. A lot of clients come to us not having any idea how much they're moving every day, how many steps they're getting. They don't track the number of physical activity minutes they get in a week, and they don't know how much of their day they're sitting. And I think it can be hugely beneficial to collect some information and then use that information to create some healthier habits. Like, hey, can I shoot for X number of steps each day and working up to a more active lifestyle versus a sedentary lifestyle? That is absolutely going to benefit your health. It's absolutely going to help not just physical health, but also mental health. In terms of food, again, I think a lot of people don't know well, how much of your diet is comprised of protein? Are you getting enough protein to look, feel, and perform your best? Is the majority of your diet coming from carbohydrates? Are you getting a lot of processed foods, or are you eating primarily whole foods? I think tracking that can be super helpful. If we want to take it in the caloric direction, again, I think a lot of people don't know how many calories they're taking in. You don't need to in order to successfully lose body fat, as we talk about all the time here. But I do think it can be helpful for certain clients who maybe come to us and say, I'm eating 1200 calories a day. I'm not losing weight. What gives? Maybe we try tracking and we realize, oh, hey, I was forgetting to put the oils that I cook with in my log. I wasn't adding, you know, the couple of bites of my kids' chicken nuggets and mac and cheese that I polish off their lunch plates pretty much every day. And you know what? I was kind of forgetting about that latte I have every afternoon. There's a couple hundred of calories that maybe we weren't factoring in. And now that gives us so much information that we can utilize moving forward to create the fat loss that we're looking for, or to create the health promotion change, whether that's lowering our cholesterol or, you know, our blood sugar, for example. So yes, I think tracking both food and fitness can be hugely helpful. I say that as someone who has abused tracking of food and fitness, to which it became harmful and not helpful. But that was because I became dependent on those tracking mechanisms to tell me what I could and couldn't eat, to punish myself with more exercise always being better and less exercise being a bad thing. So I think tracking can be a crutch. I think it can be abused and it can be a source of obsession. So it depends on how you go about tracking, whether you have help and guidance tracking. But the majority of the time, yes, I think tracking food and fitness can absolutely help.
And I think it's important, and I'm going to make an assumption here about what you're saying. You are not saying you need to track food and fitness forever. You are you are saying it can be helpful to, like you said, gather up some information, gain some awareness about where your baseline is so that you can improve upon that. I 100% agree with you. For people saying, I'm doing everything right and I'm not losing weight, tracking is probably going to be hugely beneficial. If you have no idea that you're sitting at 2000 steps a day, tracking that is going to be hugely beneficial. But like you said, is it helpful with what? Because there's 1000 different goals and 1000 different reasons why tracking could be or could not be helpful. If you're literally just in it for health, all you really need to do is focus on a primarily whole foods-based diet, right? When it comes to nutrition, you're going to get some great health benefits from that. I am currently started training for another half marathon. I like to track my runs to make sure I'm building my mileage up. That's really helpful for me there. For somebody else who's just trying to move their body more and get outside and have some fun, they don't need to track how far they're going every day. So there's just so many reasons why tracking can be helpful and why tracking can be not so helpful or not necessary. When it comes to fat loss, for 90% of us, I think some kind of tracking is going to be necessary because our bodies don't naturally want to eat in a caloric deficit. And with how easily it is to overconsume calories these days with all of these delicious, highly palatable foods, it's great to have a little bit of awareness that, oh, I actually just ate, you know, 300 calories worth of cookies. I didn't even realize it. Like, so there's things like that where it can be really helpful. Like you said, the answer is it depends. It depends on your goals. It depends on your personality around it. Depends on your mindset with it. And there's probably going to be times in your life where it's helpful and times in your life where it's not necessary. And you can use that education that you gained from tracking to just live your life without it. And that, to me, is the ultimate goal. That's why I did not make this up. I can't remember where I heard it from, but instead of using the term like intuitive eating, I like the idea of educated eating. You're using the awareness that you gain to make some educated choices to reach your goals, look your best, feel your best, and be the healthiest like version of yourself that you can be.
I love that. I also heard intentional eating. I like that too, because you're being super intentional about what you're choosing based on the data you've collected, what you've tracked in terms of what leaves you feeling your best, looking your best, and performing your best. Mm-hmm. I do think there are a lot of people who take tracking too far. And sure, that's something that we're very cautious about with our clients. So for example, if you're tracking the exact number of calories you're burning in every workout, why? If you're like frustrated if you're over your calorie goal by 20 calories and that like ruins the day? Why? One of the things that was really helpful for me to understand is that tracking in any capacity is never 100% accurate. The exercise calories, your tracker, whatever tracker you're using, whether it's on the treadmill or you're wearing a watch, it is not accurate. And the same thing goes for MyFitnessPal or any like calorie counting app that is prescribing you a certain number of calories based on your height, your weight, your gender, your physical activity level. You could have two people who have the same information and they don't need the exact same number of calories because of metabolism differences, because of, you know, certain absorption issues. Like there is no way any tracker is 100% accurate. So I think it all depends on like the emphasis you're placing on it. Certain things can be super helpful to track. For example, I mentally track the weights that I use at the gym so that when I go to do that same workout next time, I can then challenge myself and I'm not like going back doing 50 pounds lighter, which isn't really going to challenge my body, right? That is a beneficial form of tracking, but I'm not obsessing over it to the point where it's sucking health and joy from my life, which have done. With fitness and food, we don't need to do that. And yes, to answer your question, it should always be a temporary tool. You don't need to track food and fitness aggressively or track everything that you're eating or everything that you're doing for a long period of time.
100% agree. Yeah. And make sure your mindset's in the right place. Like you said, if going 20 calories over, or if you hit 9,000 steps instead of 10,000, like that's still a check mark on the day. You still did great. You don't have to beat yourself up over these oftentimes arbitrary numbers that we're trying to hit.
Yeah. It's just so individual. Like I encourage a lot of my clients to take a look at their phone. What does your health app tell you in terms of how many steps you get a day? Because that's really educational for our purposes with nutrition coaching. But years ago, I decided to stop wearing a watch that told me to stop wearing a Fitbit that told me how many steps I was getting because I don't need that level of specificity. I now use my phone and I know that it might tell me, hey, you got like 6,000 or 7,000 steps today. I know I got more than that because I don't take my phone everywhere, but I don't need to know the exact number of steps that I get because I know that that's something that my brain likes to obsess over. So I think it's very individual specific. You have to know what is going to be helpful and potentially harmful for you.
My watch actually broke in March and I haven't got it fixed yet. And I panicked for a second. Like, I'm not going to, what? Great. Now I'm just going to sit on the couch all day. Of course, that's not what happened. I can intuitively know from wearing that watch for many years, I'm pretty active today. I probably hit close to kind of like where I like to be, or today was kind of a sedentary day. Maybe I should get up and squeeze another walk in, but it is, there's not that pressure to hit a specific number. And I actually find I really enjoy that. So in that way, like, so again, nuance, I'm tracking my runs right now. I track my weights in the gym as well. I'm not tracking my steps. So there's a time and a place for it all.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. Okay. Speaking of fitness, we have a final question that is sort of seasonal specific. And that question is, what are some ideas for go-to small non-impact movements that I can do to get away from my desk, but to stay in the AC because it's so hot outside? So this person is looking for ways to stay active without having to like sweat their face off walking outside.
As a Midwesterner, I 1,000% can understand this. The humidity these days is disgusting. So I have like five quick tips that I thought of with this question. Number one is utilize being indoors. If this person specifically means away from their desk, I walk around the office, go up and down the stairs if you have them. You can join a gym just for the time being and walk on a treadmill or use an elliptical. Get a walking pad at home if it's in the budget, because those are hugely helpful. You can hop on them for 5 or 10 minutes at a time. Go old school, go to a mall, go walk around, something like that, and stay in the AC. But find somewhere inside that you can walk around. I understand that it's hot outside, but I would also encourage more frequent but shorter walks outside, literally 5 minutes if you need them to be up to I have a little quick loop around my house. It takes maybe 10 minutes, if that. I could do that multiple times a day. Pacing around your house, if you're on the phone, walking around, cleaning. I used to go, before I had my walking pad, I would go up and down the stairs If I felt like it was either really cold or really hot or raining or something like that, and I needed some movement, I would just pace around my house. Another quick and easy one that honestly I would recommend you do all the time is utilize those like short bursts throughout the day where you could add in some movement, like taking the stairs or parking further away, things like that, that they do add up as you do them consistently, straightening the house, maybe getting a little gardening in if it's not too hot, things like that, just moving. And then if it's really hard for you throughout the day and you just can't handle the heat, going early in the morning or later at night can be helpful. I know that's not everybody's favorite things to do. It can be a great way to start your day. It can be a great way to end your day too. And you're not going to be in the dead heat middle of the day. Hopefully the humidity's down a little bit where you are. The sun's down. It's cooling off a little bit. But yeah, I would just get creative and encourage you to understand that these little bursts of movement throughout the day all add up. They all count. You might look a little different. You might have to be a little bit more intentional, but it absolutely can be done year round, just moving regularly throughout the day.
Yeah, this is definitely like heat specific right now, but I think these are all applicable answers for even like in the winter time when it's super cold. It's just not always going to be feasible to be outside unless, like you said, right now you're going super early or super late. But there are so many ways to be active inside. I think the barrier is it's boring. But boring and done is better than not boring and no activity, not done, right? So I remember when I used to work for our local hospital as a sports nutritionist, I was in the office all day. And when I didn't have patients, I would literally walk around the conference table. So boring, but I would like put on a podcast or I would be like answering emails like on my phone while I was doing that to help distract myself. I have a client who right now, super hot outside. She has a young child at home who's napping and she wanted to increase her physical activity. So she puts on a favorite playlist and walks up and down her staircase when her baby's sleeping. Is that boring? Yeah. But is she getting it done and feeling better afterwards? Yes. And what's the alternative? Like sitting down for the time her baby's napping and then not moving? Like that's possible, but it's not going to help her reach her goals. So I love the boring, like, okay, I don't feel like pacing in my office while I'm on a phone call, but like, what else am I going to do? I'm going to sit on my tush. I also love a dance party to like put on a playlist. Sometimes I think we don't think of dancing as appropriate movement. It's fantastic movement. And yoga, stretching, like all of those things are better than just sitting and being sedentary for the entire day. I also had a client who every time she got up from her desk chair, she would commit to doing 10 bodyweight squats. So like if she was going to the bathroom, 10 bodyweight squats. If she was getting up to get something out of the filing cabinet, 10 bodyweight squats. So again, this kind of depends on like where you're at. She worked at home, so she wasn't like doing bodyweight squats with her coworkers right next to her. But kind of doing things like bodyweight squats, lunges, hip bridges, push-ups, planks, you know, things that you can easily do with very limited space in the comfort of your own office or your own home. That's an option too.
I have a client who uses these YouTube walking workouts. And it reminded me that I had done in the freezing cold when the kids were little, I had used this guy too. And you can find like a 2000 step workout up to 10,000. You could throw on a playlist. You just follow what he's doing. It's Get Fit with Rick. And it's just walk. And he kind of makes it fun. It's not like you're just marching, staring at him forever. You're moving around a little bit. He switches it up. He has some like music, but he's not talking a ton. So you don't have to listen to what he's saying. Yeah, I'm like looking at it, right? 5,000 steps at home, 10,000 steps at home, 1 mile fast walk at home. So you can kind of fit it with your schedule. And if you're really struggling, but you still want to get your steps in or just get some movement in, that could be a good option too.
I will say I love my walking pad and I know it's an investment. I've got mine on Black Friday, but it just is a game changer for someone who lives in like the humidest, hottest state ever. When I don't want to go outside and get super sweaty, walking pad allows me to like get things done on my computer while getting my steps. Over the weekend, I was supposed to do, well, it was part of my workout plan to do a cardio workout, and we have an assault bike in the garage that is not air conditioned. I brought that heavy honking thing inside and sat my tush in front of the TV and biked inside. So also, I do think there's like pros to having maybe a piece of fitness equipment or like something you can play with, even if it's just bands or kettlebells at home, that you don't have to go anywhere to get your movement in.
They even have those, like, it's like pedals that you can, it's not a bike. It's just literally pedals that you could be sitting in a chair watching TV, but you're pedaling. So you're moving, your blood's flowing, you're getting a little bit of movement in. I'm funny. I don't love it. I'll go in the heat. I am a huge baby when it comes to the cold. I don't want to go in the cold. It's so much harder for me to get motivated to go in the cold. The heat isn't fun. It's not my ideal, but man, the cold, it's 10 times harder for me to get outside.
If you know that you struggle though, like getting active during certain seasons, or maybe you're just not someone who can feel great being active solo. I'm someone who loves like working out by myself. I don't want to talk to people. Like it's kind of my introvert time. But if you know you work best in like community, go to a class, like go to a class at the gym, find a like mommy and me walking group or something. And maybe, you know, like that is indoors if it's super hot where you are, or most gyms are air conditioned too. And I know not everyone has the time or the flexibility to like go to a gym, but that's a great option too.
Yeah. There are ways to get it done. It might require a little extra effort and a little extra creativity, but it's one of those things where if it is like a priority, you can find the creative ways to do it.
Yeah. And just an FYI, this is what we help our clients to do. So if they're like, hey, I am so confused about how I can like get movement in right now because I don't want to be outside, we brainstorm with them. We figure out like, well, what's going to work with your schedule and what are things that you don't hate and you actually enjoy? Or if a client, I had a client recently who was like, I need some like shelf stable items. We're going to be traveling and I want to make sure I have like goal supportive options that I can take with me. So we did a huge grocery list together. Like this is what we do for our coaching clients. So if you feel like I just need some individualized guidance in terms of like what my nutrition strategy is, how I can reach my goals and kind of have some assistance knowing, should I track? Shouldn't I track? Like, how do I set myself up for long-term success, knowing that the results that I create are going to last? When this is dropping, so Lauren and I are recording this on Friday, and when this is officially live, so if you're listening to this right now, we are currently offering a crazy opportunity that we have never offered before, where you can get up to 3 months of one-on-one nutrition coaching for free. So if you are committing to 6 months, we are gifting you a free month in addition to those 6 months. If you commit to 9 months of one-on-one nutrition coaching, we are gifting you 2 free months. And if you commit to 12 months of nutrition coaching, we are gifting you 3 free months. Because the one thing that we've seen is that it's too easy to be influenced by diet culture and think this should happen faster. I should be like making progress faster. I should be seeing, you know, changes on the scale faster. And creating lifelong healthy habits takes time. So we want to gift you some of that time back because we know you can be successful with the method, the nutrition coaching philosophy we use here at Nutrition Coaching with Nicole. So this is a very temporary offer. This is only being offered through the first week of August. So if you are listening to this, jump on this opportunity. Just send Lauren or I a DM, send us the word free, and we will know what you're talking about. We will know that you listened to this episode, and we will send you all the juicy details. But up to 3 months of one-on-one nutrition coaching for free, hell yes, sign me up.
Such a good deal. So excited to offer this to everybody.
I can't wait. I can't wait. Can you imagine like the results people are going to get when even at the beginning, they're like, okay, I know this is going to take some time, but I'm in, like I'm fully committed. Let's go.
Oh my God. It's mind blowing when you can approach it with, this is going to take some time, but I am committed for what, 6, 7, 15 months at a time, maybe. And I'm willing to take this time to dedicate to myself and my health and looking my best and reaching all of these goals. I mean, as opposed to like, oh, here's a 30-day quick fix. I'm going to see what I can do with that. Totally, totally different results, totally different mindset, totally different process. We are here to walk you through it step by step and give you, like we've been saying this whole time, your individual blueprint that's going to work for you.
Speaking of tracking, I track this, right? So I love data. Our most successful clients work with us for between 9 and 12 months. Now that might sound like a long time to someone who's coming from like conventional dieting, but if you think about going through almost every season of a year, if not every season of the calendar year, crushing your nutrition and knowing, oh, okay, this is a hard season. This is a busy season. This is a holiday season, but getting the tools and getting the skills that you need to make and or maintain progress through those seasons. That's why they're our most successful clients, is because they've walked that journey with us in their corner and they know exactly what they need to do to continue succeeding long-term. So that's what we want for you. That's kind of our mission behind this. We want you to be one of our most successful clients. If that's you, click the link in the show notes below or send us a DM with the word free and we will send you all the details.
Can't wait. I'm so excited.
Catch you on the flip side, squad.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. If you like what you heard today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and then head on over to nutritioncoachingwithnicole.com where you can sign up for my weekly emails where I send out my favorite tips, tricks, advice, and support every single Monday morning to help you kick your week off right. Thanks for listening. Until next time.